Na buddhi bhedam janayet.
Na buddhi bhedam janayet.
Agyanam karma sanginam.
Agyanam karma sanginam.
Joshayet sarva karmani.
Joshayet sarva karmani.
Vidvan yuktak samacharan.
Vidvan yuktak samacharan.
Do not.
Buddhi bedam.
Disrupt the intelligent. Janayet.
Do.
Agyanam.
Of the foolish.
Karma sanginam.
Attached to fruitive work.
Joshayet. Dovetailed.
Sarva.
All.
Karmani.
Work. Vidvan.
Learned.
Yuktaha.
All engaged.
Samacharan.
Practicing.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Let not the wise disrupt the minds of the ignorant who are attached to fruitive action. They should not be encouraged to refrain from work, but to engage in work in the spirit of devotion. Purport. Vedaij chasaravayat ahameva vedyaha. That is the end of all Vedic rituals. The words mean, Krishna says, by all the Vedas, I am to be known. And Prabhupada says that is the end of all Vedic rituals. All rituals, all performances of sacrifice, and everything that is put into the Vedas, including all directions for material activities, are meant for understanding Krishna, who is the ultimate goal of life. But because the conditioned souls do not know anything beyond sense gratification, they study the Vedas to that end. Through sense regulations, however, one is gradually elevated to Krishna consciousness. Therefore, a realized soul in Krishna consciousness should not disturb others in their activities or understanding, but he should act by showing how the results of all work can be dedicated to the service of Krishna. The learned Krishna conscious person may act in such a way that the ignorant person working for sense gratification may learn how to act and how to behave. Although the ignorant man is not to be disturbed in his activities, still a slightly developed Krishna conscious person may directly be engaged in the service of Lord Krishna without waiting for other Vedic formulas. For this fortunate man, there is no need to follow the Vedic rituals, because in direct Krishna consciousness, one can have all the results simply by following the prescribed duties of a particular person. So Krishna is advising Arjuna, don't confuse ignorant people in such a way that they'll just stop their prescribed activities and maybe do nothing or do something incoherent. You're trying to teach them renunciation, that's okay. But if they just give everything up, all their responsibilities, nothing is accomplished. Renunciation is the negative side of spiritual life. It is needed. You have to negate the material, but you have to replace it with something spiritual. Spiritual life cannot be empty. The false Advaitavad Mayavadi conception of an empty supreme or a formless supreme. There's not much difference between Nirvisheshavada and Shunyavada. Prabhupada is glorified as saving the world from both of these. One is the teaching of Shankaracharya, which is very prominent in India. The other is the teachings of Lord Buddha, which are not very prominent in India anymore. But if you go further east to all the Far East countries, Southeastern countries, Buddhism is very popular. And this is largely Shunyavad, idea that the Supreme is empty. And to say he's empty and to say he's got no form is about the same thing. There's no substantial difference. If something has no name, no form, no qualities, what is it? It's nothing, basically. So don't lead people to just nihilism. Give them something to believe in. They need some positive concept of spiritual life. Otherwise, what's the use? They might as well continue their material life. So they give up their families, give up their jobs, go to Vrindavan. They have no devotion for Krishna. What will they do? They'll become debauchees. You know, they have not purified their propensities. They're still interested in sense gratification. So they've given up their pious wife and their family that they're responsible for and their job. And now they become so-called sadhus. And they're setting a very bad example, engaged in worse sinful activities than they were before. You leave your family to go to Vrindavan, and then you live with some prostitute. What is that? And these things happen. So don't encourage people to make a false move toward renunciation. They have to be encouraged first to develop a real taste, a higher taste for spiritual life. Param drishtva nivartate. When someone has tasted a higher happiness, then he can give up his petty sense gratification. But don't push him to do it prematurely. So that's one reason why Krishna is telling Arjuna, don't confuse innocent, ignorant people by just telling them everything you're doing is nonsense, give it up. They're not ready for something better. Rather, joshayet sarva karnamani. They should be engaged in a higher purpose. Hare Krishna. The key to all this is the devotee. Krishna can give the instructions, but he expects his devotees to help him carry it out. Krishna is not going to force anybody to do anything. He didn't force Arjuna. He told Arjuna, he gave Arjuna so much advice, what to do, how to think. But then in the end he said, Vimrishai tadasheshena yatechasi tata kuru. You think about everything I told you, and you decide what you want to do. I'm not going to force you. I'm not going to interfere with your choice. If you don't want to fight, go ahead. Leave the battlefield and face the consequences. Ata chetvam ahankaran naryotsyasi vinamshyati. I warn you, if out of false ego you decide, because false ego means you think you're this body, and Bhishma and Drona are your relatives, and therefore you can't fight with them. This is bodily conception. But if you do it, if you add a false ego, identification with your body and your family, you decide not to fight, I'm warning you, you're going to be in serious trouble. Vinamshyasi. You're going to fall into trouble. But still, I leave the choice to you. I've given you my advice, I've given you my clear warning, but I'm not going to force you. So that's how God works. He doesn't force not only Arjuna because he's a friend, but he's the well-wishing friend of every living entity. Suridak Sarva Bhutanam. Surida, well-wishing friend. Sarva Bhutanam, of all creatures. We have friends and then we have well-wishing friends. A mitra is a friend. No. But an ordinary friend. Ordinary friends may get each other in trouble. You know, let's not go to school today. Let's go watch the cinema. You know, and they both get in trouble. And the parents beat both of them. You know, this is your friend. Your good friend has got you in trouble. Because he's not really thinking of your welfare. He's just thinking, let's have some fun. That's an ordinary friend. But a surid is someone who actually is concerned for your welfare. And he'll tell you, let's go to school. I don't want to get in trouble again. You know, I'm your friend. I don't want you to get into trouble. That's surid. Krishna is not just mitra. Yeah, let's enjoy. No, he's well-wishing friend of every living being. Krishna wants to enjoy with his intimate devotees. But those who are wayward, who have rejected him, he has to teach them stern lessons because he's their well-wishing friend. Krishna punishes the fallen, the rebellious living entities by subjecting them to the control of the illusory power of Maya for their good, because he is their well-wishing friend. He's the well-wishing friend of every living entity. We learn that and we'll understand God a lot better than we do now. We're thinking, why does Krishna do this to me? Why does God do this to me? Why am I poor? Why am I sick? Why can't I convince people to do what I want? Why does God give me a hard time? We don't understand. He's our best friend. If he's giving us a hard time, it's for our good. We want to go to the cinema, and he's telling us, no, we're supposed to go to school. He's our friend. So, like that, although Krishna is everybody's friend, it's his strategy not to force anybody. So he gets his mercy distributed through his agents, through the devotees. Krishna is giving this advice to Arjuna. Don't confuse the innocent, the ignorant. Engage them in a higher purpose of activity by hook or crook. Use their propensities, but direct those propensities to a higher purpose. And he's telling his devotees to do it. He's not going to interfere himself. He sends his devotees to interfere with our lives. We should invite the devotees. Please come. I know you're doing this on behalf of the Supreme Lord. Please come and interfere with my life. We should ask Krishna's devotees to do that. Now, then when we let our lives get interfered with by the Vaishnavas, we'll be able to understand the Supreme Lord and we'll get ourselves engaged in his service. Most blessed thing that can happen to anybody, to become the dasa of Krishna. We don't want to be dasa. Dasa is slave, servant. We want to be Prabhu, Ishvara. Ishvara hum hum bogi. I'm the Lord. I'm the enjoyer. This is materialistic mentality. Nobody wants to proclaim dasosmi. But the Vaishnavas learn that that's the proper attitude. You know, the filthiest word in the English language is independent. You know, that word we should wash our mouth out with soap if we ever say it. You know, we should never want to be independent. We should always want to be dependent. And it's not a master but a servant. That is the Vaishnava attitude. But we have to learn it gradually. So the devotees have to be very smart. They have to cleverly engage materialistic people in acts of devotion, knowingly or unknowingly, willingly or by, not deceit, but by tact. You have to engage people in Krishna's service. Let not the wise disrupt the minds of the ignorant who are attached to fruit of action. They should not be encouraged to refrain from work, but to engage in work in the spirit of devotion. As Krishna explained in the beginning of this chapter, nobody can refrain from work. Everyone is active. Spirit soul is always conscious. There are certain qualities you cannot remove from the spirit soul, from the Atma, any more than you can remove the potential of heat, giving heat and light from fire. You can cover them, you can pervert them, but you cannot make them go away altogether. Fire always has a propensity to give heat and light. Water has propensity to moisten. You may freeze the water, but that frozen water can be easily melted again, and then it will again display its natural quality of moistening, of flowing as a liquid. You can stop it artificially by freezing it, but or boiling it so it turns into a gas. But when brought back to room temperature, it re-manifests its inseparable qualities. Similarly, the soul. You can cover him over and you can deviate him. You can make him think that he's something he's not. You can make him think he's a king, a beggar, an atheist, a socialist, anything. You can make him think he's a cockroach walking around on six legs? Very ugly body. And this living entity, divine spirit soul, is thinking that I'm a cockroach. So you can confuse the living entity and he forgets his real identity. My identity is not that I'm American or a cockroach. My identity is that I'm eternal servant of Krishna. I even have more specific identity as a particular kind of servant of Krishna, but that I've forgotten. That I have to be reminded of later on when I make more advancement. But now, at least in the beginning of devotional service, we should understand basically, theoretically, the fact that we are eternal servants of God. And we should be engaged in His service. That's our business in life. The devotees know that. Other people don't. Devotees, therefore, should act as Krishna's representatives, his agents, to help other people understand that basic fact of life. Prabhupada says an interesting thing here. Everything that is put into the Vedas, including all directions for material activities, are meant for understanding Krishna, who is the ultimate goal of life. Okay, Krishna is the ultimate goal of life. Well, by definition, he's God. Okay, if he's really God, then he must be the ultimate goal of life. That's reasonable. As long as we can accept that Krishna is God. But let's accept that hypothetically. What about this other part, though? Everything that's in the Vedas, including all the directions for material activities, are meant for understanding Krishna. Well, how is that? How are the ritualistic parts of the Vedas that just tell you how to go to heaven, how to get a good son, how to defeat your enemies, and different rituals for doing these things? What does this have to do with understanding Krishna, you might ask? Well, it goes with the second part. The second part is actually the reason. Because Krishna is the ultimate goal of life. Why do you want to go to heaven? Because you think, although you're thinking wrongly, you think that's the goal of life. Then now my life is imperfect. When I get to heaven, then I'll be perfect. My life will be successful. Or you're thinking, if you're even less intelligent, if I get a good son, then my life is perfect. He'll take over the business. I'll retire happily. My life will be perfect. Or if I get rid of these enemies and destroy them, then I'll be perfect. Then my life will be perfect. You have different conceptions of what you think is the perfection, the goal of life. They're all wrong. Actually, the lotus feet of Krishna, attaining the privilege, regaining the privilege to serve the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, this is the ultimate goal of life. To enjoy the ecstasy, the unlimited and constantly increasing and variegated pleasure of having an intimate, loving relationship with God. This is the real goal of life. When you've achieved that, then you can call yourself successful. So, if Krishna is really the goal of life, then all these other Vedic ritualistic endeavors for going to heaven, for getting a son, for defeating your enemies, which are just misunderstood supposed goals of life, they're actually supposed to be aiming at the real goal of life. So actually, yes, the real purpose of all the Vedic rituals is ultimately to understand Krishna. Go to heaven. Go ahead. Kshine punye marcha lokam vishanti. Tetam bukva swarga lokam vishalam. You can go to heaven and enjoy for a long time. One manvantara. Millions, hundreds of millions of years you can enjoy with the demigods. You can become one of them. Drink soma rasa and listen and watch the apsaras dancing in the heavenly gardens. You can enjoy life for a long time, and then your good karma is used up and you go back down again to the world of mortals, marcha loka. And maybe this time you'll be a cockroach. And you'll realize, no, I guess this is not really it. Either while you're up there in heaven and you get bored with it, or else when you come down and become a cockroach or finally become a human being again, you'll realize, no. As Krishna says in the Gita, Kshine punye marcha lokam vishanti. The enjoyment of heaven is temporary and it's actually limited, and then you got to come back to where you started from. What's the use? Where is the ultimate goal of life? Tadviganartam sagurumi vabhigachet. If you want to find that out, approach the Vaishnavas. Accept the Vaishnavas as your gurus. Inquire from them submissively and find out from them. They have a better idea of what the goal of life is. Nate vidu swartha gatimhi vishnum. Unfortunately, Prahlad says, most people don't understand that their real self-interest, the real goal of their life, is the service, the loving service of Lord Vishnu. That they don't realize. But Prahlad and devotees who are enlightened by great devotees, great souls like Prahlad, they may not have the realization, the direct experience that someone like Prahlad has. But the ordinary devotees, at least they've heard. They know theoretically. They can repeat the message because they've heard it with faith. They may not have yet seen with their own two eyes, but they're confident because they've heard and they believe it. They're trusting. Bona fide. They're acting in good faith. So such devotees can enlighten us also. They can steer us to the right path. So this is Krishna's responsibility that he's assigning to his devotees. We have to guide those who are even more ignorant than us. I may be so ignorant myself, but I've been taught a few things by my spiritual teachers. Whatever I've learned, I have to try to share that knowledge with others. To the extent of my realization, if I pose as someone knowing much more than I actually do, then I'm a hypocrite. But if I honestly just repeat what I know, what I understand, then I can enlighten other souls. Simple thing. You don't have to be a genius. You don't have to be a mystic yogi. You don't have to be God to become a representative of Krishna. You just repeat what you've heard and understood for the benefit of people who need to hear these things. Just like when they need to perform every 10 years the census of the country. They hire all sorts of people to go out and knock door to door. Not just expert statisticians with PhDs. Every village, every block in the city, they have to have people going door to door. And they hire all sorts of people to do the job. So like that, when you have a big job that has to be done, how do you get information from 1 billion people? Then you engage anybody and everybody you can who can be relied on to do the work. So in the work of spreading divine knowledge, of Krishna consciousness, everybody who's fit to do the job has to be conscripted to engage in the preaching work. Not just for experts with a PhD or with a sannyas degree. You know, it's for every devotee who knows something and maybe is practicing also, practicing what he preaches, then he should share this knowledge with others. So successful preaching is not to confuse people and lead them to inaction, to just give up their responsibilities, but to gradually and realistically and carefully engage more and more of what they have in Krishna's service and gradually learn that Krishna, that pleasing Krishna is the whole purpose of life. Hare Krishna. So I'll stop there. Are there any questions or comments? Nope. Thank you. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.